Awesome.
All right, let's kick this off. Welcome to our crowdfunding podcast that I started, and we're gonna have one of my friends and one of my favorite commission artists, Andrew Peepoy, and he's gonna be talking about his Kickstarter that's launching on September 14th, called The Adventures of Simone and Ajax. And why don't you introduce us to it?
Well, The Adventures of Simone and Ajax has been around for a while, and I felt like it was time that the world could use some more jokes and some more fun, so I decided this was the year to bring them back. It also happens to be their 30th anniversary. And Simone and Ajax is the rather bizarre and wacky adventures of a 20-something girl and her small, cartoony-looking dinosaur pal. You might say it's a very odd buddy comedy. And they go to any time or place I feel like sending them and usually cause a little chaos and have some fun along the way.
Why did you decide to go Kickstarter with this? Is it because of the convention circuit sort of not happening this year?
It's more because I've been wanting to do it, well, let's just say the way I wanted to do it, and had not been able to quite get the right arrangement that I had that sort of allowed me to do it, like I said, the sort of the way I wanted to do it. And so I've been seeing a lot of my friends having a lot of good success with Kickstarter, like friends like Dan Parent or Giselle Agassi and people like that. And so I thought, well, I'm gonna give this a try. And I started out as a fanzine self-publisher back in the 80s, so it's like sort of a return to self-publishing.
Oh, that's sweet. I didn't know about this fanzine part.
Oh yeah, no, I was publishing fanzines from like 1981 till I think I put my last one out in like 1988, and then I went pro in 1989.
Oh, I love fanzines. I love to pick 'em up anytime I get a chance, 'cause you never know what you'll find in them.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, if I stumble across some of the extras I know I haven't stored sometime, I'll try to remember to grab you a couple.
That's very cool. So Andrew, how can they find the Kickstarter?
Well, as of this particular moment, I don't have the actual Kickstarter web address for it yet, but once it goes live on the 14th, supposedly, you will be able to just search Andrew Peepoy or Simone and Ajax on Kickstarter, or as soon as I have that web link address, and hopefully that'll be a few days in advance of the campaign, it'll be posted at the immediately on the landing pages of both of my websites, www.peepoy, peepoy.com, and www.simoneandajax.com, Simone with an E, all one word.
And I'll
And
also put the web link in the show notes
that would
so
be
they'll be able
great.
to find it.
I'd really appreciate that. Yeah, because I
Yeah.
mean, obviously, got to, I appreciate anybody checking it out.
So what kind of tiers are you going to be doing with this Kickstarter?
There's a wide variety because I want anybody who just even wants to show a little support to the real serious collector to have something that they could like. Certainly, if you feel like just throwing in a dollar or two to support the cause, I will be very appreciative of that. But you can buy just okay. So the book is made up. I've sort of broken it down to four issues, but it's all one long book. And you can buy the first digital issue for just $5. You can get the digital, but you can get the whole digital collection for $10, which will also include all digital stretch goals. But sort of the main pledge would be at the $30 level, you get the complete printed book, plus, of course, any physical or digital stretch goals. But there's certainly going to be reward levels where you can buy a commission of your favorite character. You can get a mystery box, and every mystery box is going to contain some kind of piece of art by me, some kind of sketch, drawing, something, maybe even a finished drawing. And one of the mystery boxes is going to get a published, finished pinup worth at least $200. There will be art levels. One of the special art levels is the covers for all four digital issues of Simone and Ajax. I have never, in the 30 years of Simone and Ajax, ever sold a published piece of Simone and Ajax art. So this will be the first time anyone could have a chance at that. So I'm hoping somebody might be interested in that. And there'll be other art rewards too, you know, covers from dinosaurs and things like that. So or you can, you know, if you're an aspiring artist, you can get a portfolio review with me. Or if you happen to, you know, be in Chicago or want to come to Chicago, you can, I'll buy you lunch, but you'll buy the reward to go and have lunch with me. Assuming we can all actually go to restaurants anytime.
Yeah, I would take that if I could get to Chicago, but I think it would be a great time.
Yeah. I even had to write into the reward. Hopefully we can do this soon, but it's pandemic permitting. So.
Yeah, that sounds like a great. A matter of fact, I was actually wearing your Simone and Ajax shirt yesterday, because I had bought your shirt. I was supposed to wear it today, but I wasn't thinking properly. I wore it yesterday.
Well, you know, you were getting into the mood early.
I was.
You were. So I appreciate that.
How did Simone and Ajax come up? Because it sounds like you're really close to this property. Like this is your baby.
Yeah, it just sort of developed in various ways back when I was in college. And like Ajax's first appearance, and I'm going to include this first appearance in as one of the bonus pages in the book. His first appearance was in a painting I did in one of my classes back in college, where we had to do a montage of different photographic elements and work and then turn it into a watercolor. And I just thought it was missing something. So I painted this little tiny green dinosaur into the corner, just peering around. And I just thought that's what made the painting. And since he supported the painting, I decided to call it, I decided to name him Ajax. And, just called the painting Ajax Triumphant. And so I just started doodling him more. And, you know, I'll admit Simone spun out of, you know, there was a cute girl who sat next to me in my statistics class back in college, who sort of helped inspire some doodles that led to Simone. And
did she know she inspired it?
I don't know. I actually, you know, being curious about that, I'd lost track of her years and years and years ago, and actually found her on Facebook the other day and sent her a friend request. So, you know, I will mention that to her if she does accept the friend request and I message her.
That'll be interesting.
But, you might say the characters are both me, which is one reason why it's close to me in that, you know, Ajax is my more, you might say, thoughtful, little cautious side, while Simone would be more the side of me that's, just sort of like, hey, let's go out there and have some fun and you know, well, if we get into some trouble, we'll fix it then.
Yeah, I think I met you for the very first time in Denver. I think it was Denver Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I sort of followed you to Heroes. And you've been to Baltimore too, right?
Oh, yeah. Baltimore is one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, those are the two shows that I always see you at usually. Is Heroes in Baltimore. But I first met you at Denver, and I saw your stuff, and I was like, man, I really want a commission. And you did an Elastigirl for me.
I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, it was the very first Andrew Peepoy commission that I have, and now I have a slew. And I think my absolute favorite is Lady Blackhawk. Because it's like the perfect pose and the perfect look. Like it's just her dropping her cap.
Okay. I sort of vaguely remember that one.
Yeah, that was my absolute favorite. But I love your pieces. I love when other people get commissions and I can see what they're getting on Facebook. 'Cause I'm jealous. I loved your covers for when you did Archie books. You were doing covers back then. Now you're doing Red Sonja. And I can't believe how much work that you've actually done. Like there's things that I dig up every now and then, and it says inked by Peepoy. And you've done a lot of work, and I've looked at some real obscure stuff, such as, like, I think it was North Star Comics recently I looked, and you had inked it, and I was like, wow.
North Star, was that the horror book from, like,
yeah, the horror book, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a black and white.
Right. I drew one little short story for that. Yeah, because I, yeah. North Star was actually an imprint of the second version of Kimiko. And I actually lived just a short walk from the Kimiko offices. So I ended up doing a few odd jobs for them.
Yeah, that was really cool. And I just, you even did Batman recently, Tom King's Batman. You did inks on that.
Yeah, I did this weird little five-page, really dark, funny animal. So you can't even call it funny, but it's like, yeah, just really dark.
Yeah, it was
funny,
like a, it was like a fable
segment.
A fable segment.
Right. It was penciled by Mark Buckingham and inked by me, and yeah, it was pretty twisted, but you know, it was fun to do. And I mean, Tom's a great guy, so I was happy to finally get to do something working with him. We've met at a number of conventions, had some good conversations, and so it was nice to, you know, nice to be able to actually do something together.
And it fit really appropriately, like that if I remember, that was like KGB's Beast's backstory or something, like a fable that he was saying. And it was creepy. It was like told in a fable story, but very, very dark.
Right. Much even darker than fables usually ever got. So.
Yeah. Would you say that you're mostly known for fables? Like when you go to a convention, is that where most of your fan base is, or is it all over the place?
It's all over the place because I've done a as you mentioned, a wide variety of stuff. I've been very, very fortunate that over the years, different projects have come along that I've been able to be attached to for, you know, a period of time. So, like, say, yeah, I mean, certainly I get a lot of people coming up with the Fables comics. But, you know, I mean, I was on Fables for 10 years, but I was on The Simpsons for 18 years. So I certainly have a number of people coming up with that. I was on Scooby-Doo for 10 years, so I still get a lot of that coming up. But then I spent much of the 90s and early 2000s working on X-Men related books. And I still have a lot of people walking up with piles of those things. And, you know, I'm just happy that people have been buying the comics all this time. You know, keeps me employed, keeps me paying the bills.
Yeah, so it seems like every year I go by your booth and I was like, I didn't know that you did this. And there's even some projects that didn't see the light of day that I wished we did see, because I saw pages of that. And
which one?
It was the one that I think you were launching with somebody and then the funding didn't go through. I don't remember exactly, but it was space oriented.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That one, the deal just didn't quite, the whole project just didn't quite pan out.
Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to get your Dick Tracy in spirit, page that you did for the back cover of a free comic that was issued out.
Right, yeah. Joe Staten and Mike Curtis, who do the Dick Tracy strip, have been occasionally doing these self-published freebie comics that will collect a certain story arc out of one of their runs on Dick Tracy. And so, yeah, so that was that was stuck as a pinup in there. And that actually, in the end, I don't know if you knew, led to me guest drawing the Dick Tracy strip for 2 weeks last year.
Yeah, I remember that. That was really cool.
And I got to bring back Friday Foster in that, which was one thing I thought was great. You know, Friday Foster had not appeared since her strip ended in 1975, and she was the first black character to get her own major syndicate newspaper strip.
I think there's something coming out too that was solicited in previews about Friday Foster.
Right, Ablaze Publishing is doing a collection of the Sundays.
Yes.
I wish it was a collection of the dailies and the Sundays, because they all blended together into one story. So I mean,
right.
I'm not sure how easy it's going to be to follow, but we'll find out. I pre-ordered it because I'm a fan of that artist, and in fact, that artist's son bought some of the originals from that story. The original, you know, artist on Friday Foster, his son in Spain contacted me and bought several of the originals from the run that I did.
That is really, really cool. Matter of fact, I bought that. I pre-ordered that book too. It just looked fantastic.
Yeah, no, Jose Longeron. Yeah. I've never been able to quite pronounce the last name, but wonderful, wonderful work. I'm a huge fan. I'm kicking myself for not having bought one of his originals a number of years ago when you could still afford them, because now they show up and they're going for way, way too much money.
The one thing I liked, though, that one reader described your book as an Archie comic with the sensibilities of the Marx Brothers. That's a huge compliment, because
that's why I use that quote, because it's like, yeah, I love that.
I love it because I just think the Marx Brothers were so far ahead of their time. I just can't believe some of the humor that they did. It was so different and it stood out. I love the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, I mean, that's why people are still watching their movies, you know, whatever, like, you know, at this point, we're at, like, you know, some of the movies are 90 years later, and we're still watching their movies. Because, yeah, they were something outstanding and special. And, I mean, I was lucky enough to just, you know, my parents, you know, would take me to Marx Brothers movies when they'd be showing with the local library when I was a kid. So I was lucky to get to see a lot of that stuff that maybe other people didn't always get to see. And so, yeah, I've been a fan of that since I was, you know, I mean, since I was a little kid. I mean, probably when I was about 10 years old, I went out on Halloween as Groucho Marx.
So. That would have been a good a picture of that.
I do have a picture of me doing Groucho Marx about 5 or 6 years ago. I did that again.
You do go to costume parties quite a bit. I see you dressing up for them.
I have fun with Halloween. That's going to be one of my great disappointments this year. With you know, there just won't be the Halloween parties to go to. I you know, for me, Halloween isn't just celebrating that one day. I'm usually out at you know, various things for like the whole week beforehand. This is a lot of fun.
Kirk, do you have any questions?
Well, most of mine would be more Kickstarter centric because I'm a super backer, and there's been a lot of campaigns that, you know, I can see, well, that worked for them, this worked for them. So I'm curious about things like how far along are you on this project, Andrew? I mean, when the campaign ends, how long before you actually send the books off for print, for example?
Well, my plan, so right now my plan is to keep working on the book while the campaign's going. I mean, at this particular moment, while we're recording this, the entire 100-some pages of the new comics material that'll be in the book is completely written and thumbnailed. I've drawn about 60% of it. Jason Millay, who has been my colorist on Simone and Ajax for the last 12 years, is coloring it. He's colored about half of it. And so I am hoping, my plan is to try to get the whole thing drawn by the beginning of January, and then send it off to the printer, and then hopefully have the books back by, I'm hoping, the end of March, and get them all out to everybody in April. But what I want to make sure, just to keep people not having to wait too long, is one of the things I'm going to do with it. Then I got this inspiration from Dan Parent and Fernando Ruiz's Kickstarters. That's why I broke it down into sort of four issues, so that along the way, as things are finished, I can be delivering to all the backers a digital issue here and there, so that they can see and read the book and enjoy it in you know, long before they'll actually be able to get the printed book in their hands. Because I don't want everyone to have to wait all the way until April of next year to enjoy it.
Do you plan to sign your rewards?
There is a signed level. There's like the regular standard edition will just come as the standard edition, but you can buy a signed edition, or you can buy a signed and doodled edition, where I'll draw you a little, maybe a Simone head or a little Ajax or a little Lemming or something like that. And certainly if you are buying any of the, cover art rewards, your book will come automatically signed and doodled as well.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm really having fun with this. I have to admit, this is the most fun I've had drawing in a while. It's just nice to be back working on this. And so I'm really, really looking forward to it. what else can I tell? I'm sure I'm not thinking of some things I should be telling you guys. What else would you guys like to know about this?
Well, are you handling fulfillment yourself, or will you have a third party do that? Because shipping is where I think many Kickstarters totally underestimate how much time and money that's going to take.
Right, right. Even though this is my first Kickstarter, I have been talking to a lot of people about how to do this right. So I've been very lucky that guys like Brian Polito and Trevor Mueller and Dan Parent and other people I know who've had successful Kickstarters have taken the time to sort of coach me through some of this. And so, yeah, I assume if the Kickstarter does, a certain level of books, I should be able to fulfill it myself. I have friends who are willing to help me, pack up all the stuff and get it out of here. I mean, if it does spectacularly, and hey, I'm not going to object to that.
Neither will I.
Right, right. I mean, if it does spectacularly and becomes something that just is too unwieldy to fulfill myself, then yes, I've already been in contact with two fulfillment services and been talking to them about how to make this happen. So I am trying to be prepared. I mean, there's always that little risks and challenges section at the end when you're filling out your Kickstarter campaign. And as I put in there, 2020 has taught us we can never quite know what's going to happen next. But I have tried with the help of these various friends who've done this very successfully before to plan ahead for as many contingencies as I can think of. And certainly, so I'm going to be trying to do my best to make sure that this comes out and is in everybody's hands when I promised it to them. And of course, like any responsible person though, if 2020 or even 2021 throws some more bumps in the road, I will let everybody know what's happening. I don't want to leave anyone waiting and wondering what's going on, but I'm hoping that I can actually, avoid those extra bumps and I'm planning on getting it to everyone on time.
Well, that's good that you're thinking ahead of time and you're asking people that have had success, because I think your first project is very important to be successful so you could have other projects and people believe in your product and they want to go back and get it because they got a package they were satisfied with.
Right. That's certainly an idea I'm going into this with, because I said, I'm having a lot of fun with this, and I'd like to keep doing my own projects the way I want to do my own projects and hoping that other people will like them. So I am hoping that this is only the first of several Kickstarters. I've actually been planning ahead for several others, some of them being Simone and Ajax, projects, some of them being something different. And so I'm hoping if this one works out well, I'm hoping to be doing two more Kickstarters next year.
And I usually support those ones that do me good, because there's several. I back a lot of projects. And there's several that I do every year. And like clockwork, because I know that I'm getting a quality product. I know I'm going to get the product the way I want the product to be there. And just a couple of advice on the shipping. Make sure you ship it in something that it's not going to bend and get destroyed by the postal service. And always put on there, do not bend, because some of us don't have like those mailboxes that, they'll, and a mailman will shove it into like this, 5-inch slot.
Right, right. Well, I have already picked out a good sturdy mailer for this project. You mentioned that the shipping is like, one of those things that has been, pointed out to me by pretty much everyone I've talked to was plan ahead for your shipping. So I have picked out a mailer. I have taken something very similar to what I expect my final book to be like to the post office, stuffed with various extras that I'm hoping will go through, that we'll be able to do on some stretch goals there, and had it weighed for how much it's going to cost for me to ship it in the US and Canada, Mexico, Europe, Australia. So I have planned ahead to try, to make sure one, it's going to get there in one safe piece, because I'm a collector myself. I get that you want this to come and show up in nicely. But I also know that a lot of people have told me, you know, it's the postage that'll kill you most times if you get that wrong. So yeah. I've tried to get either an exact or a pretty good guess as to what everything's going to cost me to ship. And in fact, there are certain awards that because of shipping, like with the mystery boxes, or there's a wraparound cover available as a stretch goal. Those are going to be available only to the U.S. because of shipping purposes, just so I can make sure I can afford the shipping and it's not, you know, and you're going to get it safely.
Yeah, that's important because a lot of people get burnt by underestimating shipping.
Right. And that seems to be the number one problem people have.
Yeah.
Right.
Because so if you have like art tiers, make sure you know how the sizes and mailing of those too. Yeah. So.
Right. I've been working on that too. But yeah, it occurs to me I should tell you a little bit more about what's going to be actually in the book.
Yeah.
So I'm planning on the book being 128 pages with better than 100 pages of actual brand new Simone and Ajax adventure stories. There are going to be four different stories. The first one is a pirate adventure. I mean, who doesn't love pirates? They're a lot of fun. And I get to put Ajax in a fun little pirate hat and Simone in her little pirate costume. I don't want to give anything too much away in the stories, but this one is a really fast-paced, fun adventure. But aren't they all? Anyway, the second story is called Tremblin' Tumbleweeds, and it's Simone and Ajax in the Old West. So everyone always likes to see Ajax in his hats. So Ajax has a cowboy hat in this one. And the third story is called Monster Mia. And that's the longest story in the book. So that one, when I divide it up into individual issues, because none of the stories are the same length, but that one is the longest. And that one, when you get your digital issues, will be divided between all of issue 3 and the first half of issue 4. And in that story, you know, Simone and Ajax meet up with some of the classic monsters like Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and some other interesting creatures who you'll just have to wait till you read the story. And in the last story, everyone always seems to like the Ajax private eye stories, with Ajax being all tough as nails, you know, and looking darn cute doing it. So I'm wrapping it all up. with another Ajax private eye story. And I've just been having so much fun working on this. I just finished writing the Private Eye story a couple weeks ago, and just, you know, coming up with some of that hard-boiled, you know, Seamus type dialogue was just great to do. And without giving anything away, it ties in with a past Simone and Ajax story. So you'll just have to, once again, when you read it, hopefully you'll catch where that one came from.
That sounds great. I mean, you got a lot of genres there.
Well, that's the fun thing with Simone and Ajax. Like I said earlier, I can send them any time or place I feel like sending them. So, you know, they always remain Simone and Ajax, the characters that they are. But I can play with all sorts of settings that I want to. It doesn't limit me to just having to draw, oh, they're always in this place. No, they can be in any place. And it gives me a chance to play with like Simone's outfits. I mean, you probably know I used to draw Katie Keene for Archie Comics. And that was one of the fun parts, is always designing the outfits. And so with Simone, I like to come up with interesting outfits for her. And if anything, like as I've been posting the cover for the third issue, the Monster Mia cover, I've been getting a lot of comments from people on Facebook and Instagram and stuff, saying that they want, you know, that they want Simone's outfit, or where did she get those boots, you know? So.
Maybe you could get a clothing line.
If somebody wants to, you know, it's like if somebody wants to, you know, take some of my designs and make something, sure. But, I think as far as clothing lines go for me, it'll be maybe a new round of Simone and Ajax t-shirts down the road.
So, could they jump into this trade without knowing Simone and Ajax from like the previous trade that I picked up?
Right. Yeah. The thing with Simone and Ajax is I try to make it so that every story can pretty much stand on its own. Like even with the one I mentioned, there's a tie-in to one of their older stories. You don't have to have read that older story. Um, I I, you know, like when I was growing up reading comics, and certainly in the past, you know, you could pick up any random issue, you know, like a lot, almost any random issue of Superman or Donald Duck or something, and you didn't have to necessarily know everything about the backstory of this character and everything they've been doing for the last 17 years. So I try to write my stories as self-contained, fun stories. There'll usually be a little something in there early on to try to, you know, give you a good establishing moment so that you understand Simone and Ajax as characters. And that's, so then, yeah, you can just read it. Oh, go ahead.
That's great, because that's the way comics used to be. We all started with spinner racks and used to be able to pick issue 100 off the spinner rack and be able to at least know what came sort of before it and where it's going.
Right. I mean, certainly when I started reading, you know, Superman and Batman and stuff, I didn't have to know everything they'd done for the last several years to be able to just pick up a random issue and start reading it.
Right.
I mean, I remember when I first started picking up X-Men, it was in the middle of the Dark Phoenix saga, and I was very confused at that point, though. But,
yeah. Are your tiers going to sort of limit it? So, let's say you have a commission tier, and are you going to, like, limit it to, like, 100 or something within reason?
I think I have the commission tier limited to 25 at this point.
Okay.
Maybe 50. I'd have to double check. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's no more than 50. It might only be 25 commissions. Because I mean, it's like I want to be making sure that I'm doing whatever I can to get the book done rather than spending all of my time on commissions.
Like commissions,
but I do know people like commissions, and so I want to make sure some of those are available.
They definitely do like commissions.
Yeah. And I mean, like one of the things, I mean, certainly you can pick whatever character you want, but as I write in the commission description, you know, if you pick Simone, you get a second character for free as long as it's Ajax. You know, so, because they're a team, they have to go together.
So one of the things that I've noticed lately on Kickstarters, and I don't know if you're going to do this or not, but it seems to work to get like an initial boost of money, like, and it's called like an early bird tier, and it's usually open for just either a day or a few hours sometimes, and what it is it's just like a tier that allows you to get the book a little lower than normal. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it works out, but I know that tiers that have that seem to hit their goal faster earlier. Hmm. And I don't know if you've considered that, but it seems like it's one of those tiers that there was an Alex DeCampi book that came out recently, and or sometimes they even limit it like to 25 or early bird tiers or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's like the first 25 get this. And I've noticed it on like the last 5 Kickstarters I supported, and it seems to get projects funded faster. So it's just something to consider.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. I know I've certainly been an early bird backer on various campaigns myself. So that is something I hadn't thought of. So, I'm hope maybe I can still add that in. I mean, the campaign at this point has been submitted to Kickstarter, but I can still edit and add things along, you know, until, you know, even after it goes live. But yes, I'm once I hear back from them that everything's a go, I can still certainly add that in.
Yeah.
And that's a good thought. So maybe, yeah, maybe you'll get to be, you know, if you hopefully then maybe you get to be one of the early bird backers. at this point, the date that I'm aiming for to launch this is at noon Eastern time on Monday, September 14th. That's my plan at this point. That is dependent on Kickstarter approving it all, as is. But I'm hoping, having had several people review my campaign page before I submitted it, that it will it'll hopefully just go through just fine.
Kirk, do you have any other things to add, like to Kickstarter tiers, or because you've been doing Kickstarters before there even was a Kickstarter? Like, I mean, you're Kirk is
I've
the
been
guy,
doing it a long time.
Kirk is the guy that saw the little coupon in like some of the old comics to send away for a signed comic book back in the day or something like that. Well, Kirk has those.
So well, I didn't like to limit myself to one thing because I grew up in a rural area and we didn't have access to a local comic shop very often. So I was always sending away for things because otherwise I was just dependent on whatever showed up at the spinner rack.
Right. I was much the same way. Yeah. I was in a small town in Michigan. So, I mean, once in a while we'd get to go to the big city. Our big city was Grand Rapids or, you know, or even once in a great while. You know, Chicago, but most of the time, yeah, I was limited to what was in the spinner rack, so I did a lot of mail orders as a kid.
Well, the drawback to the early bird for me as a fan backing is sometimes I get mad going, well, I don't want to pay more. Those 30 people who backed on day one got it for $5 less, mm-hmm. and unless he hits a stretch goal, I don't want to pay $5 more. But for your book, I would be willing to do that, but, you know, there's upside and a downside that. For anything.
Right, right. Well, there's several, you know, there's several other reward levels like that that I will probably have to give some thought to before I add them or not add them in the coming days. But I'm hopefully pretty well set where I've got it. I mean, like I said, I've been planning this all year long and been talking to people, getting advice from it, you know, since the beginning of the year. So I'm hoping, like I said, I've been trying to be real careful to make sure that my campaign is set up and run well. And set up well in advance so that when it is live, I won't be running into a whole lot of problems. But I'm, you know, and as it says in there, it's like, you know, if there's a reward level where I'm, you know, you're not getting the combo of rewards that you want, I tell people in there, message me and let's see what we can do. I want people to be happy and feel comfortable with what they're trusting me to give them, because that's the thing. They're putting some faith and trust in me. Because it's not like they can just, you know, give me the money and think, oh, I'm going to get, you know, this book's already printed, I'm going to get it in 2 weeks. No, they're going to have to wait a number of months to actually get this in their hands. And that's, you know, that means they're putting, you know, putting their trust and faith in me, and I don't want to disappoint them on that. And I want them to feel comfortable doing that. So, yeah, I'm happy, you know, I'm along the way happy to answer any questions, see if I can find whatever arrangement is going to work for you to make you happy and make you feel comfortable, you know, giving me this money and being willing to wait however long you have to wait to get the book.
Well, my favorite levels are always when they build on each other. Like, okay, you get the book at this level, you get a book and a signed print at this level, you get a book, a signed print, and a commission at this level. And so that way I never feel like I've missed out, and it makes my decisions easier, because then I'm just going to go for the highest level I can possibly afford to get as much cool stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if this level only has the book or this level only has the prints, then I'm like, well, which do I really want? I love that print, but I'm backing because I want the book, you know, something.
Well, every level of mine, except for the, you know, digital first issue, every level is going to have the book, whether it's in digital form or print form. So everyone gets the book. And if there are prints, that's one of the aims for the stretch goals. If you order the book, you're going to get the prints.
Wonderful.
You know, or, you know, it's like, so I have several stretch goals in mind already. I am making sure I ask for enough money to make sure I can produce the book without having to ask for too much. But if it, like I said, if it's grandly successful, wonderful. And I have a number of stretch goals in mind, such as, you know, everyone starts out with it as a paperback. And if we reach the you know, just the initial goal, that, you know, great. But if we can, the first stretch goal beyond that is going to be upgrading everyone at no additional cost to a hardcover. I've already priced that out.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, that's what I really, you know, that's the book I'd really like to see happen. But I want to make sure it happens in some forms, which is why I'm asking for it. What I hope is a reasonable goal to at least make sure it happens as a paperback. But I'd like to see the stretch goal for a hardcover with no additional cost to anybody. There are stretch goals for prints and stickers and things like that that everybody will get at no additional cost to them. So, I, you know, like I said, I'm planning ahead. I'm also going to have a couple things that I'm not going to say what they are yet, but a couple things I'm going to call incentive goals, where at some point in the campaign there'll be an announcement about something else special that can happen to try to help boost that I'm hoping will help boost the number of backers. So we'll see. Like I said, I've been planning this out for, you know, the last 6 months. Pretty much, I started working on this almost as soon as the shutdown started. So I've had a lot of time to try to think and try to come up with stuff I think would be fun as a backer. Because I mean, you know, like when you go to Kickstarter, you can see, oh, what else has this person backed? I mean, I've backed about 125 different Kickstarters, and so, you know, I've also tried to learn from the campaigns I've backed as to what makes it fun. And so I'm hoping that I'm doing that too.
Well, as a collector of your original art, I'm curious, what format are you working in? I know you've done a lot of your work at twice upsize. How are you working on Simone and Ajax?
Well, I mean, on the standard story pages, which I'm actually not selling at this point, those are just, you know, regular 11 by 17. But the covers, it didn't feel like it needed to be a full twice up. So it's not 200%, but it's 175% up. So the original Simone and Ajax covers are about 13 inches by 20 inches for the originals. So still substantially larger than 11 by 17.
Very nice.
I mean, as an art collector, I like having something that looks nice and impressive on a wall. I mean, one of my favorite things to collect are old Sunday strips. And so you have these nice big originals. And so, yeah, when I do prefer, if I'm working on something, especially something detailed, like Red Sonja or Dinosaucers or something like that, I prefer to be working twice up on those covers. And that they make and I know collectors have said they make a really nice original. So I Simone and Ajax is not as detailed, so I didn't think it needed the whole twice up. But yeah, I still wanted to make something bigger than your standard 11 by 17. So whoever buys it still has this nice, impressive looking piece of art on the wall that they're happy with.
That was a good question, Kirk. Because I think the sizes should be in there, because sometimes something is too big. Like you know where you want it, and it's either too big or too small, and you got to make it right in your house. In other words,
right.
So it's nice to know that size ahead of time.
Right. No, everything they're on the Kickstarter page. There's a little graphic with all four of the Simone and Ajax covers, and it mentions their size. And there's another graphic with the five Dinosaucers covers that are available and their size. And in fact, you know, one of the Dinosaucers is the wraparound cover for the trade paperback. And I have to make sure I mention the size on that, because it's 22 by 29. So it's huge. And that's the reason that one is limited to US and Canada shipping, because I can't, I just can't ship that safely elsewhere in the world.
Do you have a retailer tier?
I do. Okay. I just added that one this morning. You know, I'd already submitted the campaign, but it's like this morning it suddenly hit me. It's like, I hadn't done that.
Yeah.
So yes, for retailers who want it, it's five copies at 40% off cover, including shipping in the U.S. And I've mentioned in there that if they want a different number of copies or outside the U.S. to contact me, and we'll figure something out. I mean, like I said, I want to stress, ask me anything and we'll figure something out. Because like I said, I want people to be able to get what they want the way they want it. If it's at all possible for me to do that for them.
Yeah. Like Kirk's question too about the building is a interesting question, because I never realized before until two Kickstarters ago, or maybe three Kickstarters ago, I wanted to get two of the tiers, but Kickstarter didn't let me get two. Like I had to swap one to the bigger tier and then work behind the scenes to get the other tier, because I couldn't select two tiers.
Right. I mean, unfortunately, it's almost impossible to come up with every single combination everybody could possibly want.
Yeah.
Which is one of the nice things about like using BackerKit, which I plan on using for this. So that, you know, either one, we can work something out ahead of time, or two, we can do add-ons through BackerKit afterwards.
Yeah.
Because it's almost impossible to come up with every single combination somebody might want. So it's like, if somebody wants to buy, say, one of the covers and a mystery box, and, you know, wants to also get the portfolio review. Yeah, I mean, that would be complicated, but I will, you know, it's like, I will do my best to work with them to easily find them a way, and through BackerKit, we can make sure it happens.
Have you ever done a collection of your commissions?
I've done a sketchbook.
Yeah, a sketchbook.
And that was about, I did a sketchbook about 10 years ago for my 20th anniversary in the business. So there's that, though that didn't really, wasn't so much, there was a hand, there were a few commissions in there, but that was also a lot of, you know, different material, behind the scenes stuff, like some things from like preliminaries for Little Orphan Annie or Katie Keene or even Spy Kids that nobody else had seen.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, but I mean, and the thing with the thing with the commissions is the trouble I'd have with a sketchbook there is that as much as I'd like to do that, a lot of times I just get to take a photograph, not a proper scan of the artwork when I'm at a convention, because I'm doing those commissions on the spot.
Right.
I mean, anything I'm doing at home and then shipping, which I don't do that often, I then, you know, those I can get nice scans of. And so, yes, maybe at the end of this campaign, if I do, if, you know, if I get 25 or 50 commission requests, I'll have enough to do a sketchbook of that because I'll be doing those at home and I'll be able to scan them. And then maybe that can be a nice little bonus for the next Kickstarter is, you know, if we reach a certain stretch goal, everybody gets a little, you know, 16-page sketchbook. That was a reward on one of the campaigns I backed recently, the Mark Schultz, Al Williamson campaign through Flesk. They reached a certain stretch goal and everybody got a bonus 16-page sketchbook.
I'm very late to the game on the Mark Schultz stuff, that's for sure.
Mark's great. In fact, he wrote the introduction to the previous Simone and Ajax collection.
Yeah, I saw that in the Word document you sent me. I said that was really cool because I didn't realize until late in the game like it was the Cadillacs and Dinosaurs was him.
Yeah. And Mark is an amazing artist and just one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. And he was. We are fans of each other. I certainly look at, you know, I look at Mark's stuff. It's sort of the this old thing of sort of like every cartoonist wants to be a great illustrator. And every illustrator wants to be a cartoonist. And so, I mean, I sort of bridge the gap between the two a little bit. You know, I like to think, though I'll never be the illustrator Mark is. But yeah, I'd love to be able to do the beautiful kinds of stuff Mark does. But at the same time, Mark looks at my stuff and he's like, he loves the clean lines and the simplicity of it. Sometimes, we were supposed to work on a project together. Oh, gee, maybe 20 years ago that didn't end up happening at DC Comics. And that's how we ended up meeting. And,
I would love to hear what that is. Can you say what it might've been like character?
Yeah. I mean, it's so many years since that it's not like I'm giving anything away. This would have been probably, you know, like I said, about 20 years ago, early days of the internet exploding. So somewhere around 2000, and an editor was going to team us up with Mark writing and me drawing an online Superman strip.
Oh, wow. That would have been sweet.
You know, with me doing it in more my classic, slick style.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have loved to have done that, but unfortunately, yeah, it didn't happen. But at least it brought Mark and me together, and we've been friends ever since. And it's like, and it's you know, it's like I was one of my favorite little Mark moments is when I was working on this one cover for a reprint of Wash Tubs and Captain Easy, the classic newspaper strip, and I was doing this full color illustration for the cover, and Mark called me up while I was working on it and I said to him, yeah, you know, the problem is, you know, it's like I in my head, it looks like this great mix of Roy Crane and Enoch Bowles, but unfortunately when it comes out on the paper, it looks like I did it. And Mark said to me, you know, I have that same problem. And so it was kind of encouraging that when, you know, if someone as brilliant as him has the same, you know, troubles and doubts with their own work, but it's like, you know, but it also made me wonder, it's sort of like, if what comes out of his brush is so beautiful and brilliant. It's like, how amazing is whatever is in his head that's not quite getting out there on the paper, you know?
he's incredible. I discovered him through Death Rattle, and I honestly thought when I saw that issue that they were reprinting some old EC comic that I was unfamiliar with, because it just looked of that era with Al Williamson and Wally Wood and such, that how can this guy be a modern artist and drawing like this? You know, because this was the era of Liefeld, and that's two different extremes right there.
Right. But, I will make a note that I don't want to, saying, you know, put Rob down at all, because I mean,
people, oh no, I'm a fan of his. It's yeah, just a Rob's, different Rob, style.
Rob's also one of the nicest guys in comics, you know, I mean, and so, you know, and I know he's been having a rough time of it in these last few days, you know, with the internet and, you know, that, so I, you know, I, but yeah, two very different kinds of artists. And, but yeah, I mean, speaking of Mark and Kickstarters, that like there's a Kickstarter that he's planning that I'm just waiting for the day that I get to back it, because he's bringing back Xenozoic Tales.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and
I mean, he just had that Al Williamson and Mark Schultz one, right?
Right, right. Which I backed, and that's the one you get the 16-page sketchbook with. But yeah, I know I've already seen the prelims for a lot of the pages for the graphic novel, and it's amazing. It's going to be just I just cannot wait to throw my money at him for this project. So.
Yeah,
I mean that's the fun about Kickstarter, is that there's so many projects that it's like you look at them and you're going, wow, you know what? Why isn't like some major publisher bringing me this? It's like, but it's like, you know, so it's like, no, I want to make sure this exists. I want to see this happen. So I want to make sure, you know, I put my money behind it and make sure this becomes reality. I get that, you know, from the fan side. And I'm hoping that the way I'm producing this Simone and Ajax Kickstarter, that I can get a few people excited that same way about this.
Well, I think you're actually, by doing Kickstarter too, you're hitting a different demographic, because it seems more like, instead of like pre-ordering from your previews or something, people have more access to like what's on Kickstarter. Like they can just bring it up on the app and see what it's there. Because like I know like Todd McFarlane had huge success like just doing a Spawn toy on Kickstarter. And Keanu Reeves was launching something with Matt Kent. And it's coming out in previews, but they already like Kickstarted the volumes in hardcover, and it's like at $200,000 already. And it seems like it's hitting a bigger mass of distribution for fans than something at an LCS, like people shy to go into an LCS or something like that. I don't know.
Well, it's also, you can feel like, you know, you really feel like you're a part of it, and you're instrumental in making something happen. I mean, like I said, it's like this with the comics things. It's like this with other things. Like there was a Kickstarter similar type backer event for this club here in Chicago, and it's like, you know, I gave them a little money, but then for anyone who was local, they were like, oh yes, come in and tour our space on this one night. And I went in and I saw the space, and it was like, I want to make sure this happens. It's like, this is something I'd like to exist, and it couldn't exist without backers. And so I was like, okay. I gave them a little money. Now I want to give them, you know, a bunch more, whatever I can afford, because this is something I want to see exist. And that's like I was just saying a minute ago. It's like you feel like you're part of it. You feel like you've helped something happen through these backing events. And you know, I'm hoping there are enough fans of either my work in general or Simone and Ajax from their past publications that people, or just people who have never heard of me or Simone and Ajax, but just like look at it and think, oh, this looks like a lot of fun. And that's the thing I want to stress on this, is that it's fun. And so I'm hoping that people will think, yeah, I want to help make sure that this exists, that this actually is, you know, is out there in the world.
Yeah, with everything that's going on in the world, everybody can use a little more fun in their lives.
And that's the opening line. That's like the opening line in the description of the Kickstarter you know, that is pretty much the opening line in my Kickstarter pitch, is that the world could use some more fun. And it's sort of neat. I actually got like testimonial quotes from a handful of people who didn't see my who didn't see what I had written for the campaign yet. And all four of them all ended up using the word fun somewhere in their little testimonial line. So I have testimonial lines from Patrick McDonald, who does Mutts, or Dan Parent, you know, who does Die Kitty Die and all the Archie stuff, or Bill Morrison from The Simpsons and Mad Magazine, and again, Mark Schultz. And every one of them without me even mentioning it, used the word fun. And that's the thing. I really want to stress that these are fun adventures. You know, if you're looking for something, you know, dark, deep, and meaningful, this might not be the book for you. But if you just want to have a great time with a fun adventure, and a lot of jokes, groaningly bad puns that you love to hate, this is the book for you.
Kirk, do you have any other additional questions on the Kickstarter?
Well, I've been a fan of Simone and Ajax, I know, at least since I saw them on the cover of a Westfield catalog. But how would you make a sales pitch to someone who's not familiar with them? You know, would you play up the fact that it's just fun, the dinosaur, the beautiful girl, the misadventures through time?
Anybody can read it. Right, all of that. I try to make it an all-ages adventure. Is Simone a beautiful girl? But yes, she's inspired more by the Dan DiCarlo classic Betty and Veronica thing. Look, where it's like this, she is cute, but I'm not going to push things too far because I want a kid to be able to read this and have a great time. I also want an adult to read this and have a great time because I try to write it sometimes on two different levels where it's just a good, fun story, but I'm not going to give it away. But there's in one of the stories in this new volume, there's something that I'm hoping people will catch and can play a little game, you know, game with it. Some people who are probably a little on the older side will catch these references. But yeah, it is, I for someone who hasn't read it before, if you've enjoyed, the book has been compared to Bone, to Karl Barks, to Cerebus, to Archie Comics, to Groucho Marx. If you've liked any of these and you just like a good, fun, fast-paced adventure story with a lot of jokes, a cute girl, an even cuter dinosaur, and lemmings and all sorts of zaniness, this is going to be a book you'll have a good time with and can hopefully read time and time again, and will hopefully come back for any of their future adventures. Because I mean, that's the thing. I'd love for this to be a success because I have a whole list of other stories. Because like some of the stories in this book, like the pirate story and the Monster Mia story, there have been versions of this that I've been wanting to tell for the last 25 years and have never had the opportunity to do. So I'm really happy to finally be doing those and really excited to finally be making these a reality. But I have a whole list of other things. Some of them I've only just come up with. Some of them have been in the back of my mind for 20-some years, where I'm hoping that this is finally the way that I can begin to bring Simone and Ajax to you, not just this one time, but time and time again. And every year bring you something new. And what I'd love to do as one of the future campaigns is, as you may know, Simone and Ajax appeared in a variety of black and white anthologies in the 90s. That's never been collected, and that's one of the future Kickstarters I'd like to try to bring people. So if we can make this a success, I'd love to, not only bring you new material, but get you a collection of all the old material that you've never seen, that many people have never seen before.
I know I haven't. I haven't seen the older material.
Right. I mean, it's hard to find. It appeared in a lot of different black and white anthologies in the 90s, and trying to get a complete set of some of those, I mean, it'd be near impossible. So I'm hoping that I can do a collection of that. Plus, there's a lot of stuff people haven't seen. Like there have been years I've done entire 8-page black and white mini comics as my Christmas card for people. And so I want to include those in that too. And that's going to be some of the bonuses in the in this new collection. Is besides the regular stories, I'm going to be including various color Christmas cards and other cards that I've done over the years, special illustrations I've done for people at different times, the original painting that Ajax made his first appearance in, a lot of nice bonuses that are going to be in full color. So you're going to get not only your 100-plus pages of comics, but you're going to get a variety of stuff that some people have, that almost no one has ever seen. Just to give you even more, hopefully, some good fun.
That's great. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. I'm one of your biggest fans. So
I'm very excited.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate that from both of you. And I'm just hoping that I'm hoping that I've been able to, get across how excited I am just to be making it to people out there. So that hopefully that passes along and people want to, give it a shot and try to help make this happen, because I can't do this without the backers. And I understand that. And so, I am very appreciative of any level of support, even if you can't, it's like times are tough right now. I get that. So if someone can't back it, if you could share it on social media or tell some friend of yours that you think might like it. I am very grateful for any kind of show of support on this, whether it's whether it's making an actual, pledge, or whether it's just telling more people about it, because
that's important. Just a retweet. How many times have I seen something just because somebody's retweeted it, And That's important. It gets more views.
Right, right. And so I'm grateful for any kind of support I can get for this. And I'm just, you know, and I'm grateful to the people who are going to help me make what is has been literally a dream for me to actually come true. So so this is an advanced thank you to know that I sincerely appreciate anyone who does anything to help me make this happen. So feel free to message me and you know, even just a word of encouragement, that works as well. You know, I've actually just relaunched both my websites, so you can easily contact me now as well or get on my mailing list. I've actually just relaunched both peepoy.com, peepoy.com, and simoneandajax.com. Just spell it out all as one word, Simone with an E and Ajax. Both those sites just relaunched within the last week. And you can easily message me through either of those. And I also encourage anybody who does have any interest in keeping up with whatever I'm doing on Simone and Ajax or anything to sign up for a new newsletter that I'm going to be launching on the same day as the campaign, just to keep anyone abreast of what's going on, whether I'm working on Simone and Ajax, whether I'm drawing some covers for Archie, you know, or I'm launching one of those as yet unnamed, you know, new projects. So.
Do you have a Twitter handle in case somebody wants to get a hold of you on Twitter?
Oh yeah, it's real easy. I've got a Twitter handle for myself. It's easy. It's just at Andrew Peepoy, all one word. And it's the same handle on Instagram, at Andrew Peepoy. And Simone and Ajax also have their own Twitter, at Simone Ajax. There's no and on that one, but just at Simone Ajax. On Facebook, I've got a fan page that you can easily follow. So it's, you know, facebook.com/AndrewPeepoy. And Simone and Ajax have one as well. So it's, you know, facebook.com/SimoneandAjax. I'm hoping that everybody will check those out and keep following me there as well.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. This has been a real blast for us, for sure.
It's been fun, and it's great, you know, great to get to talk to both of you guys, since, you know, I usually see you guys at conventions.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no conventions.
No concerts either. I usually get to see what concert is Andrew going to go to tonight? And yeah, I don't get to see that.
Yeah, I had so many concert tickets for this year.
Yeah.
There were so many great shows. I mean, some of these bands, it's like, I'll think, okay, you know, when we have shows, I'm going to see them. There's two shows that I'm going to miss this year Like, one of them was a once-in-a-lifetime type event that'll, you know, there's no way this will ever come together again. A festival I was going to fly all the way to Los Angeles for. I can barely afford to do that, but it's like, I can't miss this. I'm going to miss that. And there's, you know, or a band that I've been a fan of since I was a kid in the early 80s that has never toured the U.S. ever. And doing their first tour opening night here in Chicago, I could walk to the show. And I can't go now. So.
Can you mention what those bands are, just out of curiosity?
Oh, sure, yeah. No, the band that I was just mentioning that was like has never toured the U.S. is a band called Heaven 17. They were one of the original synth pop bands back in the 70s when most people have heard of the Human League and that song "Don't You Want Me." Back in the 70s, the Human League, in the late 70s, they split off into the Human League that we all know from the 80s, and two of the guys went off and formed Heaven 17. And, you know, yeah, I've been a fan of Heaven 17 since like 1982. They've only ever played two concerts, two individual concerts ever in the U.S. in the 40 years they've been around. I've never
heard of them, but I like bands when bands form other bands and then you follow them.
Yeah. Well, check out Heaven 17.
I will. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. And then the once in a lifetime concert event was, again, if you were a kid of the 80s like me and you grew up liking the alternative new wave punk music of the 80s, there was a festival called the Cruel World Festival that was going to happen in Los Angeles in May. Sold out in 20 minutes. And it was Morrissey, Bauhaus.
Oh, my God.
Blondie, Devo, The Church, The Violent Femmes, The Psychedelic Furs, Echo and the Bunnymen, Missing Persons, Public Image Limited, Gary Newman. It just went on and on and on.
That's an incredible lineup.
Yeah, yeah. And this
I love Morrissey so much. Like, whether it's the Smiths or Morrissey, and then to put Violent Femmes in there too, like, I could listen to the Violent Femmes over and over again. And Psychedelic Furs just they blow my mind.
Have you heard their new album?
I have not heard their new album.
It just came out 2 weeks ago.
I've heard one of the new songs because I have First Wave, and I forget the DJ that plays it played it, but he played their one of their released songs.
Right, right. Yeah, the new album is out. It's very good. That's been one of the nice things with the pandemic is I've gotten to listen to so much new music because people are still putting those out. If you love that era of music, I know we're going off topic here, but if you want to know probably my favorite album of the year so far is the first album in 39 years from The Vapors. Do you remember The Vapors?
Wow, Japanese. Turning Japanese.
Yes. Yeah. They put out their first new album in 39 years, and it's probably my favorite record of the year. It's fantastic.
I'll have to check it out because I am such an 80s kid. Like, I know where I was when I listened to almost every song. It just implanted in my brain. I'm with you, and I've always wanted to talk to you about music because I see the concerts you go to.
I had tickets for about a dozen different shows for this year so far, and of course, I only got to one concert before all. Usually I go to about 2 to 3 concerts a month, but for some reason in January and February there just weren't concerts going on. And so I only saw one concert at the end of January. And that's all I saw before everything shut down. And
Debbie Harry was gonna play there.
Yeah. Wow. Blondie was gonna play. But again, like I said, it was a once in it's John Lydon or Johnny Rotten of Public Image Limited
has already. Oh my
God! It wasn't the Sex Pistols, but Public Image Limited was Johnny Rotten, John Lydon's next band, and I'd never seen them. But he already during the pandemic has already announced that he is retiring from music to take care of his wife, who's very sick. So again, there's one band that if they ever do put that festival together, it'll never happen. And I've never gotten to see him live, and I was looking forward to that.
I didn't know
You mentioned the conventions. You mentioned the conventions not happening, and yeah, that's one part I'd been planning since last year for this Kickstarter that I was going to time this so that it would be running live during the New York and Baltimore Comic Cons. Usually my two of my busiest shows every year, so that I could be signing people up live at the table while doing it. Yeah. But obviously that didn't happen. Like I said, as much as we try to plan, 2020 keeps throwing things at us. And
The one thing I love about Facebook, this is the thing I love the most, is the memories feature, because I always click on what I was doing on this day, and guess what? I was in Baltimore Comic Con.
Right, yeah. No, I mean,
I was in Baltimore Comic Con this weekend.
Right, it's been showing me all my my old memories. And in fact,
matter of fact, I had a memory with you. In other words, yeah. I have a picture with you standing there with my Catwoman commission.
Okay.
And I have a picture of you at the booth, and it just popped up today. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Or yesterday what popped up was, was what I have since titled Andrew's 12-year-old fanboy dinner, in which I invited to dinner and put this whole dinner together, Joe Staten, Mike Vosburgh, Al Milgram, Fred Hembeck, Steve Lealoa, and I know I'm going to forget somebody, and somebody's going to clobber me later for forgetting who I added into this. But it's like
I saw it on Facebook because you had it there.
Yeah, and it's like every year that's something I do at Baltimore. That's one of the special things about Baltimore is it's so many pros love to do that show that you get guys who don't do any other shows sometimes or very few shows showing up at that. And you get in some ways it's still small enough that it's like you can throw together a fun little dinner party, and I try to do that every year. Last year, I ran into Howard Chaykin on the night before the con, and I invited him to dinner, and I was surprised when he said yes. And then I asked Mike Royer, and he said yes. And so I had this dinner with Chaykin and Royer had a great time talking to each other.
Yeah, I went to a Royer panel, and it was fascinating. Like that's the first time I've ever seen him speak. And I just loved it because it was like a tribute to Jack Kirby. And it was an amazing panel.
Yeah. See, I'm as much of a fan as I am, even though I've been doing this profession for 30 years, I'm still a huge fan of comics and the creators who do them. And so I try to put these little dinners together with you know, people who are either my, you know, sometimes they're my contemporaries, but sometimes they're the guys who came before me. And I've try to invite some of them and just have a nice little dinner and get to chat with them. I mean, that's been one of the amazing, one of the most amazing parts of being in comics is, you know, getting to sit down to dinner with Ramona Fraiden or Kurt Swan or Shelley Moldoff or something like that over the years and just get to chat with them. I mean, you know, that was like one of my favorite moments of the San Diego Con where, like, I was at Ramona's table one year, and at the end of the show, and it was closing down, I said to Ramona, I said, you know, so what are you doing now? She's like, oh, I don't know. I suppose I should go get something to eat. And I was like, no one's taking you out to dinner? She's like, no. And I was like, you're Ramona Fraiden. People should be lining up to be taking you out to dinner. So, you know, so we got her packed up. We got her out of the convention center. And she's like 80-something years old
yes,
at this point.
Yes,
when this happened. And I convinced them to let a cab up into the bus lanes in front of the convention center. Normally you can't do that. I said, look, we've got an 80-year-old cartoonist here.
Yeah.
Can we please get a cab up here? They let a cab up. I got her in a cab. I took her to a restaurant. We had a lovely dinner. I got to, you know, talk to her about all sorts of comic stuff and the way it was in the 50s and 60s and stuff. And, you know, put her back in a cab and got her back to her hotel afterwards. And it's like, you know, that's just... I just love the fact that so many of the people who built this business are still here and they're still showing up at conventions.
Yeah.
And I'm getting to know them, and it's my honor to take them out to dinner.
So. I love going to Ramona and talking to her. Like that's one of my highlights of a convention. I have like probably eight of her she draws like pre-drawn type commissions.
Right, right.
And I pick up like 4 or 5 at a convention if I can. And she's an amazing and kind and just I love her to pieces.
She's fantastic. She's fantastic. And she's still going. She's like 90 something years old at this point. And she's still doing commissions and people are still posting them on Facebook.
Yeah.
And she's 90 something years old and still drawing rings around most of us.
Yeah. And I the other person I met a lot and would go see every year was Alan Bellman. And he's like golden age. And, unfortunately we lost him last year.
But, right.
He was also, so much energy. I just couldn't believe it. Like he would always pose with me in pictures and he would say, oh, I want you to throw the cap shield like this. And he's like, throw it like a man. And he'd get me in a position.
Yeah. And, I hope I have that kind of energy and enthusiasm when I'm in my 90s as well.
Yeah. You know, he's an amazing individual.
Yeah. But nice to me and Mike when we're at your table in your 90s and, like, would you like to go to dinner, Mr. Peepoy?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you guys are probably almost as old as I am. So
I'm probably older. I don't know.
I am 51 years old.
I'm the same age as you.
Okay. So we'll all be in our 90s together. So we will hobble. we will hobble over to Sullivan's Steakhouse at the Baltimore Comic Con and have dinner when we're all about 90 years old.
One last question, because I could
talk
to you.
Ask me anything.
But do you know the band Mauve? Because they were really influential to me in the 80s.
Who?
Mauve, M-O-E-V.
Oh, Moev.
Yeah, Moev. Do you call them Moev?
Yeah, I've seen them live. I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Moev.
Okay, Moev.
Yeah. No, it happens. I mean, nobody knows how. I mean, it's a weird name. I mean, so, you know, obviously... It's like I think I used to mispronounce it too until I saw them live in 1989 opening up for Clan of Zymox.
I never heard of them, but I've heard of Moev.
Okay, we should.
I just
should
wanted
definitely...
to know if you saw them ever, because I never did, and I love their music. Like I still have a cassette player, and I'll drive to work and I'll play them.
No, I remember them from the 80s, and like I said, I was lucky enough to get to see them live, and I think it was 1989, and they are supposedly back. They've put up a few new tracks on Spotify.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
see, this is what I could talk to you about music and artists
we can
and
do,
everything.
We can do that.
We'll
on
have
a different
to do
podcast,
it on another another podcast.
Talking about 80s music, but. But yeah, but yeah, go check out Clan of Zymox. They just put out their 18th album, and it's really good. So.
Yeah. All right. Well,
But it's been great talking to you guys about comics. I mean, and again, you know, if you think of something later that you know you haven't asked me here, and you want to call me up and edit it back in, just let me know, because I just you know, like I said, I'm really excited about this, and I want to try to get that across to people that this is you know I'm working on my dream project here, and I really could use your help to make it happen, and I'm hoping it does, and I'm going to try to make the best comic I've ever made. The up until now, the comic I've been the most proud of that I've ever made in my entire career is that previous collection of Simone and Ajax from 10 years ago. And I'm hoping that with this, I can now have the other book I'm the most proud of my entire career.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll have to talk again soon.
Yeah. Sometime off podcast. Believe me, I'm always happy to ramble on incessantly about obscure 80s bands and stuff like that.
Well, expect me to be blowing up your mentions on Twitter when this launches, because I'll do my best to retweet and spread the word.
I really appreciate that, Kirk. I really do. And I really appreciate the fact that you have been retweeting a lot of stuff. And because I will admit, Twitter is something I've never quite been able to get any real grip of and ground on. And so I could certainly use any help I can get on Twitter to get people hearing about this. Cause I don't have the best following on there. I'm trying to build it, but I could certainly use people, you know, your help and anybody else's help that cares to retweet that along.
Well, don't be ashamed to self-promote. I see a lot of creators saying, I feel like I'm self-promoting too much because it's so easy to miss things. There will be a Kickstarter running that's kind of my pet project, and I will retweet it every day. And then on the last day, one of my friends will go, "Hey, I'm glad I saw that. I almost missed it. I'm glad you retweeted that today." And I'm like, "Where were you the other 29 days?"
Yeah, because it's a moving timeline, though. You might not be on Twitter every day. So if you do tweet it every day, it's appreciative because not everybody's going to look through every scroll. It's moving.
Right. And there's the algorithm. Right, and there's the algorithms and stuff like that that mean you don't actually see everything.
Yes.
Like, especially like on Facebook, it's like a lot, you know, several times recently I have found out after the fact that somebody was doing a Kickstarter. And it's like, oh, I would have backed your Kickstarter. Like I said, I've backed about 125 Kickstarters, so I'm more than willing to support a project that I want to see happen. So if I don't hear about it, you know, I can't back it. And I worry about that for myself, you know, because Facebook is one of the places where I do seem to have a decent little following. And I'm hoping that it doesn't, you know, that my posts about it don't just get lost in the algorithms. So again, on Facebook, if you want to share, please share. Instagram, I don't even know how you reshare those things, but hopefully people can find a way to, you know, get that word out too.
Is there a Facebook page everybody could look at? Is it a public page?
Right. Yeah, no, I have for myself, I have two pages, my personal page and my fan page. Both are public, but, you know, I hope people will follow me on the fan page because anybody, you know, even if I don't know you, can you know, follow that one. And so, like I mentioned earlier, it's just facebook.com/AndrewPPoy. Or Simone and Ajax have their own page, or even my new publishing imprint to do this, Spicy Tomato Studios, has their own page there for Spicy Tomato Studios.
So Andrew, how can they find the Kickstarter?
Well, as of this particular moment, I don't have the actual Kickstarter web address for it yet, but once it goes live on the 14th, supposedly, you will be able to just search Andrew Pepoy or Simone and Ajax on Kickstarter, or as soon as I have that web link address, and hopefully that'll be a few days in advance of the campaign, it'll be posted immediately on the landing pages of both of my websites, www.pepoy.com and www.simoneandajax.com, Simone with an E, all one word.
And I'll also put the web link in the show notes.
That would be great. I'd really appreciate that. Yeah, because I mean, obviously, I appreciate anybody checking it out.
All right. Well, thanks, and Well, check it out definitely on the 14th. That's awesome. Well, thank you. And I hope you have a good rest of your Monday, and you'll probably be back to the drawing board, I imagine.
Today is, I will be spending a little while today making some tweaks to those websites, even though peepoy.com and simoneajax.com, the new versions of each, went live this week. You know, since going live, I've found a few little things to tweak on those, so we'll be doing that. And then, yes, it's back to the drawing board, not on Simone and Ajax today, but on another Kickstarter project. I'm working on Dan Parent's Die Kitty Die, where I'm inking all of Dan's pages for that project, and I even drew a chapter of Kitty for the third issue of that.
That's a great comic. I like it.
Yeah, but then of course, as you might imagine, as soon as I finish those Kitty pages in the next couple of days, it's back onto Simone and Ajax because, you know, like I said, I want this book out and in your hands, you know, on schedule, on time, and I'm just having fun doing it, so I really want to get back to it.
Well, thank you for joining us, and I want to thank you, Kirk, because I kind of did this last minute with you, and I was glad to have you on.
Well, I am thrilled to be included. It's always great to talk comics with you, Mike, and talking to Andrew, who I've been a fan of for, gosh, probably since the late 80s, is a thrill.
Well, thanks. Yeah, and thank you to both of you for helping get the word out there and for, you know, just you know, always supporting me in you know, at any time, but especially for right now, for, you know, having me on your podcast and just helping me get the word out there, because that's the only way I'm going to make this happen, is just to get the word out there. So thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. You guys have a good one and take care.
You too.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.